So strange coming to a place where I don't know anybody. So let me pull out my notes about Kirk. Here's about four pages. No, just kidding. Kirk Harnack, CBRE, brings 40 years of hands-on experience in broadcast engineering and education to his position as Senior Solutions Consultant at Telos Alliance. His expertise in putting technology to work in broadcast facilities has driven notable expansion in audio over IP, voice over IP for broadcast, audio processing, and virtualized technology adoption by content creators. Kirk maintains an active hands-on role in broadcast engineering through his positions as a partner and VP of engineering of South Seas Broadcasting Incorporated, Delta Radio LLC, and Kauai Broadcast Partners, totaling 14 AM and FM radio stations. He'll tell you that the part that he owns is the one that doesn't make money. He's a broadcast meteorologist, fixed-wing private pilot, FAA Part 107 SUAS pilot, and licensed general-class amateur radio operator, KD5FYD. He's also program chair of SBE Chapter 103 in Nashville. Kirk founded and hosts the Internet Video Netcast, This Week in Radio Tech, or TWIRT. This one-hour weekly video netcast features regular contributors and guests from the world of radio engineering. He's also been a dear friend of mine for 20-some years. Don't let that cloud your vision about this brilliant man. Ladies and gentlemen, Kirk Harnack.
I brought a radio station with me. God, I hope this works. Good morning. Whew. Well, I'm excited about this presentation because for several years, I've been talking about virtualizing. We even brought a setup up here a couple of years ago, and Cam Eicher and I just really went kind of tried to go through everything. We brought computers and servers and all that stuff. And now, finally, we have several radio stations that are doing this. It's no longer just, hey, this is going to be great. We're actually doing it. And as part of this presentation, I'm going to show you a radio station that I just built. I'm part owner of it. As usual, I own the part that doesn't make any money. That's why I work for Telos. And we're all virtualized. But I want to get your opinion on, I'm going to carry you through a little bit of the story. So real radio hosts, that's the story, working virtually how real humans are working with containerized broadcast systems. Okay, I'm going to take you through 40 years of broadcast tech in five slides here. You know, back, a lot of you got started back in the 70s and 80s, right? I got started my broadcast engineering contract business in 1984. And, you know, we were doing things like modifying speaker phones, right? Southwestern Bell, or AT&T speaker phones and such. Western Electric, is there music playing? It's all right. That's very sleepy music. I had enough trouble keeping the audience awake. And then there's the top board of an Orban 8000, and there's the inside of an audio console. And you know, those things all grew into stuff that had some digital circuitry in it, like the Telos 10. That was the first use of DSP technology. In fact, Steve Church always said, when I got this idea to maybe use DSP to make the hybrid null better, at that moment, there were exactly five Texas Instruments DSP chips in the United States, and I got hold of one of them. And I was really careful applying power to it. Then there's, you know, the Omnia processor, the Omnia FM processor, and audio consoles, you know, started to incorporate digital ins and outs and digital mixing. Well, along came the early 2000s, and we got CPUs that were multi-core. And that meant we could actually do a whole lot more within the same box and on the same motherboard and inside the same chip. This is Ewan Roos. Ewan is one of our developers, senior coding developer at Telos Alliance. And we moved from a purpose-built world to where we could have a more generic platform. Commodity hardware and software is largely able to replace proprietary predecessors. So, now, a lot of you may remember early automation systems. That's probably the first use of this, right? So 1989, I think, was one of the first years that Smarts and maybe another company had something available that would play some terrible 8-bit audio, and nobody used it for songs, but they used it for spots and maybe for a few other things. Well, it was the multi-core CPU that started to make these things possible. In fact, people looking to build higher-end computers, they realized, well, look, people could buy a cheap commodity computer, or we can build a more expensive computer that does a whole lot more and spend more money on fans and heat sinks and mechanical design and dual power supplies, and, you know, thus servers started coming about being popular back then. Well, then we moved from purpose-built DSP stuff to purpose-built computer-based, you know, x86 processing architectures, or maybe ARM processing. And so we moved from into phone systems that were just run on a server, although we, the manufacturer, controlled the server. We had to make sure everything was just right. Telos, like other manufacturers, has had to talk to people who write BIOS and say, we really need you to change this option or add this option or make it not do this when we boot it up. In fact, one of the development problems with the Omni 11 was getting the system on module, the SOM BIOS, to behave correctly upon boot up. So it would boot up, you know, as a processor, not as something waiting to be a processor. And then we moved into audio consoles that, you know, have a mixing engine that's based on x86 CPU technology. But we were in control of everything there. Well, then, more recently, we moved from these still kind of specific built, yet using generic parts, platforms, into software that could literally run on any reasonable platform. So we came into the phone system, for example. Now you can run that on your hardware. Not doesn't have to be our hardware. The Omnia 11, or you know, through the Omnia 9 series and Omnia SST and others, you can run that on your own Windows computer or Linux computer. And an audio console now can actually run on a server, but you get to control it through a browser on something as inexpensive as a $269 Chromebook with a touchscreen. All right, so we get to move all this to compute platforms, either on premises or in the cloud. Of course, you may ask, well, why do I want to do that? I really like screwing four holes into a rack. I like the comfort of doing that, and that's natural. We're going to see, you know, how that might be passé now or later. So now your intercom, your IP codecs, your talk show, virtual mixers, audio pro, everything looks the same because it's all running. And one of the cool things, of course, about running things on servers is that they're duplicatable and they're automatable. So you can have a failure in the middle of the night, and using management software like Kubernetes, you can have things shift and move automatically, and all it does is send you an email that you read when you wake up, because nothing happened on the air, or maybe you're on air or your streams are interrupted for a few seconds at the most. So that's where we're headed to. That's where, you know, so many other IT platforms are and services. I mean, how many times have you gone to Amazon and it's just freaking not available? No, that doesn't typically happen. Oh, it happens to your bank, because your bank, you know, we're going to be down for maintenance. So, okay, thank goodness it's 2 a.m. Sunday. And they don't have the budget that Amazon has to make that automatable. But that's the idea. I'm going to make the statement, IP is the most versatile tool ever adopted in broadcasting. Better than 600 ohms, better than punch blocks. Not sure if it's better than twisted wire, but, well, yeah, it is, because this replaces most twisted wire. Most versatile tool ever adopted. So I've asked this question before to this crowd. What if broadcast equipment could be apps on servers? What if you could install them in minutes, shut them down in minutes, pay for them only when you had to use them, and of course controlled from anywhere? You know, COVID taught us that was kind of important. Although it's turning out to be important in other venues. Before I get to this, did Formula One racing, there's no truck at Formula One racing anymore, no TV truck. Each camera is sent back via IP somewhere else where they do the mixing and switching. And of course, for some years now, some sports and production companies, the announcers aren't there. I was in Australia 10 years ago, maybe 8 years ago, and I went into a room at a radio station. They had the biggest I'd seen, except at NAB, the biggest TV I've ever seen. And there's a table just like this one, with four headsets and some notepads. I said, what's this room? Well, they're getting ready to call the game. What do you mean? You mean they're not going to the game? They're not going to go see the footy? And no, they just do it from here. So they watch regular TV? Well, no, they actually have a special feed, so there's no commercials, and they give them a box that shows them, you know, more instant replays. But the announcers are here. They don't go on the road. Unless it's a home game, they'll go to a home game. All right, so anyway, the progression of this, pre-virtual machines, you know, we had a computer, we loaded an app on it with an operating system, and we used it. And we still do that with automation systems, largely. Although, I'm not sure what Chris Tarr is doing, but some of you guys are doing a server running a number of automation systems on it at the same time. Then along came virtual machines. Those have been around in one form or another for close to 40 years, but more popularly for the last 20 years, where we run an operating system and a hypervisor, and then on top of the hypervisor, we run more operating systems, and there's some downsides to that. Greg Shea, our CTO, will be along in a minute to tell you why. And then there's this new-ish thing called containers. Those were developed about 12 years ago, and just to tell you about the adoption, the summer before that, I was at a putt-putt place playing putt-putt with my then-girlfriend, now wife, and my son. And there was a foursome behind us, and the guy looks to be about my age, and we strike up a conversation. And it turns out he's the director of IT for a healthcare company, and he runs their data center in Murfreesboro, Tennessee. And I said, I'm curious, my company's starting to do things with Docker containers. You guys do any Docker containers? He says, that's all we have. Everything's Docker. Everything in our IT is Docker. Oh, he says, oh, I may have a VM to test something. But no, it's all Docker containers. So, you know, healthcare, credit cards, financial transactions, insurance companies, certainly stock trading is done. It's very good for transactional stuff. Telos's addition to all that was to make Dockers work well for real-time stuff, where you don't have an extra 5 milliseconds to handle something. No, it needs to be done every millisecond. We got to do something, and it's got to be available. Okay, continue on here. So virtual machines and software containers are kind of the two ways that things are moving on to expensive servers. You got a server that's capable of a lot. We need to make it do a lot. We need to get our money out of it. Here's Greg Shea, the CEO, or the CTO of Telos Alliance, to tell us why VMs and why containers.
Audio. Containers, why do we have both, and why would you want to use containers versus virtual machines? Well, the short answer to that is, if you've ever set up a virtual machine, you know there's a number of things you have to configure and click on and things to think about, virtual peripherals. It's rather like setting up if you bought a new computer. A container is trying to achieve the same goal, that you don't have to buy another physical computer. You want to be able to run the software independently, the installation being independent, so you don't, you know, have a conflict between other stuff that's on that computer. You want this place that's the container to run the software that you want to run. And the difference is, with containers, it is a more limited set of stuff that you have to set up. In fact, it's also designed to be automatable so that you don't have all those choices to make about all the peripherals and all those various things of setting up about a virtual machine. So a virtual machine is more comfortable if, you know, you're thinking in terms of setting up a whole computer and a whole environment for a piece of software. But a container is a very strategically designed piece of a virtual environment that allows you to run the software that you want to run with a minimum of other stuff, a minimum of overhead to worry about. So it's kind of more of a contained package, thus container.
Okay. As I mentioned with the story from the guy in Murfreesboro at the putt-putt, Google, Amazon, Visa, PayPal, MetLife, you know, these are all using. If you send me $10 with PayPal, first of all, I'll love you. But second of all, you're going through software containers. You're not going through traditional VMs or traditional apps. You're going through containers that these companies are running. And the biggest more efficient. You can do more on a server platform, more on a CPU, but also they're automatable. this computer dies, and they will, they'll all die at some point, something will go wrong, and they can just move that over to something else. It doesn't even have to be in the same data center. You know, we've got all of our stuff running at Amazon Web Services as well, AWS, and stuff is automatable. So this is Jake Alderman. He's our Virtual Solutions Program Manager. Just to explain a bit more about why this can work for broadcasters.
Manner. So traditionally we had applications that installed onto an operating system and would run on your desktop computer or a server, and we're all used to those in the broadcast environment now. And in the last 10 years or so, we've started to see some people use virtual machines, and that's taking a physical piece of hardware and making a virtual version of the computer, installing the operating system, and then installing the application on top of that operating system. Containers are a middle ground between those two. What we're able to do is, instead of virtualizing the whole machine, we're able to create an isolated place to just install the software we need, like an audio console or a phone system. And so what we do instead is we share the operating system, but we have this isolated bucket, so our audio console doesn't touch anything else. And it's not actually called a bucket, it's called a container. So you've got your container that holds your one application in isolation, similar to a VM or a physical computer, but it's able to share the resources of that greater compute platform.
Okay, makes sense. So here's what it looks like. You have a bare metal server. On top of that, you have a host operating system. That's going to be Linux. On top of that, the Docker engine, which just manages each container's access to the OS and its resources. And then I've just drawn in Telos VXS. That's a phone system. We might get to see that in a few minutes live. I've got that running at my new Oxford, Mississippi radio station. Infinity VIP is an intercom system, fully professional broadcast intercom system, for example, used at Formula One racing, also used for television coverage of the Queen's funeral some months ago and the King's coronation. Why? Because it was very quick to deploy. They could put the camera people out there, let them use their phones as with running an app as their intercom. And then people back at Master Control running traditional panels like you would have, or belt packs, and so we can run that. Axia Altus is a containerized audio console. I'll show you that in a few minutes. And now we also have Omnia Forza, which is an audio processor that can run in a container, does run in a container. So we don't need to review this too much, but this is a typical audio over IP setup where you've got a centralized switch, you got input output devices, that switch is handling LiveWire, AES-67, Wheatnet, Ravenna, all those kinds of things, whatever media you've got. And then you hang on to that mixing engine in the form of a computer, and then a console, which is really a mouse that looks like a console. And it sends commands over IP to the mix engine. Hey, subscribe to mic 1, mic 2, mic 3, subscribe to my automation system, mix them at these levels, and then the mix engine makes new program streams coming out. Program 1, 2, control room monitor, control room headphones, preview, all that. Okay, we're familiar with that. And now, of course, we can add another console just by adding it and one cable. This console happens to have the mixing engine built into it, so you could add some local input-output and then gain the resources of PCs or other things that are already on the network. So you can literally add a control room with one cable. We did that at the Cumulus Nash facility a few years ago, where they built one beautiful studio and control room. They wanted to add a second one, and literally one Cat6 cable tied in an entire standard broadcast studio to the rest of the system. Okay, what if we replaced that hardware console with some software? Well, we've done that for a few years. There's an app called Soft Surface. There's an app from a French company that's a partner with us, really designed for the French market. They want a lot of cool things on the screen at the same time. And then there's things like Pathfinder. You can make a basic little mixing console there. Point is, you don't have to have a piece of hardware to control the mixing engine. All of those things control that separate mixing engine. Well, what if we replaced some of these things instead of does that work? Not so much. Instead of the hardware mixing engine, what if we put that server there running Docker and running, I got 6 mixing engines there that say Altus in the lower left-hand corner. And then what if your control device wasn't a physical console? What if it was a laptop, literally a phone, a tablet. It could be a small computer just running a browser and a big touchscreen. That's pretty convenient, actually, the big touchscreen, and you'll see some video of that shortly. Well, that's how we're doing it with the Axia Altus product, and I think you're going to see plenty of others as well. Here are some early pictures of me deploying this. This is in Greenville, Mississippi. That's Big V, our evening R&B guy, but I added another console to the room. I said, you're going to be mixing a second show during your R&B show. He was not excited about that. But that's one way to deploy it. This is in a room that does have an old Axia Element console. It's going to die someday. It's one of the first ones we made. Actually, it's a combination of several. You guys remember that Johnny Cash song, One Piece at a Time? I got it one piece at a time. It didn't cost me a dime. Well, that console's like that. It's all mismatched. The colors don't match. It's from different years of us making Axia Element consoles. Well, it's going to die, and we're going to replace it with a touchscreen and any computer, even a NUC computer. It just has to run a browser. It doesn't have to do anything fancy whatsoever, and it'll take up less room in there as well. So that's us just trying it out. And then here's Chris Green. Hopefully, if we have time, we're going to talk to Chris Green in a few minutes live over a Chromebook, and that's him at his desk. So he's pretending it's a touchscreen. He doesn't have a touchscreen there. But you can literally run a radio station from your desk. And if you're in the LAN, if you're there at the station, well, you could just hang an Axia X node or use the computer as an I/O device. You could literally hang a microphone with a USB adapter into that computer and then have that computer on the Axia network and contribute that way. That would be your mic in there and your headphones out too, or your speakers out. Okay, those are all possibilities. So. And your connection doesn't have to be LAN because what's on the browser is low data rate. It's not LiveWire or AES-67. If you do have audio connecting, it's Opus codec. It's WebRTC. So it's just like doing a Google Meet or using CleanFeed or some other application where you got audio back and forth to a server. So it can be Wi-Fi. It can be the public internet, or it can be on the network itself. All right. Now, some other things you can do. You can put a phone system in a Docker container. One of the cool things about, if you ever bought, or if you've bought a Telos phone system lately, like a Telos VX, there's kind of a minimum size that we have to make it do in order for it to make financial sense for you to also buy the piece of hardware from us, which it comes on, right? So whether it's an older fanless engine we used to make, or whether it's a newer Supermicro server that it's in, economically, if you want one hybrid and two phone lines, we got to charge you the same as we would for eight hybrids and 200 phone lines. Software is not like that. Software, you can buy it granularly. You can buy literally one phone line and one hybrid or whatever combination that you want, and it's much cheaper. But you got to provide the hardware. There's a couple more options coming up, but basically it's your hardware that you install this on. And this is a Docker container. I should point out, has anybody installed Docker containers before? There you go, a few. It ain't child's play. We've had a couple engineers say, oh, my IT guy can install anything. I'll be glad to do that. Well, 3 weeks later, explaining it over and over and over again, no, when we say you have to use Ubuntu in order to run our script, you have to use Ubuntu. You can't use your favorite flavor of something else. So because, it's the beauty of Linux. It's, it's different. Everyone you install is different. Anyway, we're here to help. In fact, at my stations, I didn't install my own Dockers. I had my colleagues remote in, install them, set up the internal networking in the computer and that kind of stuff. But you can run this. There's some big broadcasters running this in data centers, providing telephony for numerous markets that they're in their control rooms. And we're running it at our little, college-like radio station. There's the intercom system with you can run it on tablets or access it on tablets and phones and or hardware. So again, here's what you could run right now from Telos Alliance. Other companies are doing this too. Sound4 is making audio processing and codecs available. Seems like Mike isn't here. Seems like Oraband was looking at doing some of this before. I think they had a presentation that included some of this. and Diva. I think Diva Broadcast is also, and 2WCOM has a product available as a Docker. All right, let's move on here. Oh, if you want to take the easy route out, and nothing wrong with that, Broadcast Bionics has a product called Virtual Rack. You buy the server from them, it comes preloaded with kind of like an app store. And you just you load it up, you browse into it, and you pick, oh, I want that app, and I want two audio consoles and an audio processor. And you hit a button, it installs them in a minute or two, and they you still have to license them from the respective manufacturers. But you can't, oh, this doesn't let you install too much. It takes care of the networking internally. You can do it yourself cheaper, but this is a very good way, easy way to have it work. They showed this at NAB and at IBC, so this has been actually out and available for almost a year now. Telos is also selling our own small server platform, and so if you say, look, I don't want to mess with having to buy something from Dell or HP, do you guys have some hardware? The answer is yes, and we'll ship it preloaded with the things that you want. All right, let's just move on here. Just a reminder, you can install this in the cloud or on-premise. At the moment, cloud gets a little spendy because there's data ingress and egress fees for cloud. But if you're a big organization, you're using a lot of cloud anyway. Swedish Radio, I believe, maybe some other European broadcasters, they're definitely doing this. Oh, and there's a couple of U.S. broadcasters that are doing this as well for phone systems. All right, let's get to these stories here. I said real people, let's get to the real people. We have four user stories. This is Jeff McGinley in Portland, Oregon. Like everybody else in Portland, his stations became homeless, and they had to do something. We have a morning show here. They were ripped apart by the wife's job, and so they were going to end the show or figure out how to continue it. This guy, Thane Conrock, he runs a little FM station in Oklahoma called Werewolf. And then this is Chris Green. Hopefully we'll be talking to him if we have time with the new Buzz FM in Oxford, Mississippi. So he's running, he's doing his morning show actually right now. Here is Jeff McGinley and the story of our homeless.
We're here to talk about a technical solution that you and Telos Alliance worked out. I think no person better to tell the story than you. So tell us what the problem was and tell us how you solved it.
So we are moving. We decided to move out of a studio facility that we were in for 25 years. The infrastructure was old and the building was kind of falling apart. And so we found a new facility that we were going to move into. The problem is that we ran out of time to build the new facility before we had to be out and demoed of the old facility. And so it became a very quick 6-week crush to figure out how we were going to keep our 7 radio stations on the air here in Portland without really, you know, built professional studios. And I reached out to Brian Jones, and he came by, and we had a very good talk about this. And I ended up handing him one of our new servers, and he came back with the VMs and the stacks all built for Altus. And we've been using that now for about 2 months to keep all of our stations on the air.
He said VMs. It was really Dockers. So here he describes a bit more. They centralized the operations, and I'll show you a diagram that helps explain it. But the talent was dispersed in various places around Portland, Oregon.
It's a central location for all these various places around Portland that we have to broadcast from. We've got full control over that. Everyone can reach into it using a VPN. And so up there we have all of our main automation system, our ability to import media into the automation system, our main file server, the loggers, everything is up there and can be accessed remotely, including the Altus server. That can actually be controlled remotely as well. It's up there in the central location.
So when he says a central location, what they had in Portland, there's a transmitter site that's a really good site. It's got plenty of backup power. It's got several sources of internet. And that's where they had 5 of their 7 transmitters was at this mountaintop site, or hilltop site. And so they rented, it's not their site, they rented some more space, installed a couple racks, and put their automation systems up there, along with the servers running their audio consoles. So that's in the left-hand side, that's the transmitter site. And then all their audio processing was up there as well, obviously. For the stations they had that weren't there, they just STL'd to those places. Now, if you are, and I'll explain this in a few minutes, but if you are a single operator with a laptop and a microphone and some headphones, this is all really easy. That you can just like if you were doing a Google Meet or a Zoom meeting on your own. Nothing fancy is needed, just mic and headphones and your laptop. But if you've got several people together in the same room, that's more problematic because those people have to hear each other with zero delay. They can't go and come back for each one of them. It doesn't work. I tried that with Chris Tobin on This Week in Radio Tech some years ago, and we, after 12 seconds, we decided this isn't going to work. So they had some sports shows, sports talk shows that they do, and so they had to get several people in the same location so they could see each other, talk fast about sports. So they rented a couple of office locations in Portland. They put a little cheap, you know, Behringer mixer there and mixed the mics together and then sent that mix into the WebRTC HTML5 surface, the console that I showed you pictures of earlier, and we'll see some more. And then they had another computer that just remote access for their playout control. So that's how they handled multi-people in a studio. Of course, security is important, so Jeff is an IT guy.
We have a VPN client that we use that we enable, and then we log into, and it does two-factor authentication, and it connects all of the... So for the end user, it's very simple. All of the magic happens inside the firewalls to allow in the group policies to make sure that user has access to what it needs to and that the firewalls are open and allowing all the traffic through that needs to. So for the end user, it's simple. It's really easy for the networking team, the firewall team, for us just to make sure. It's a little bit more complicated, but once it's up and running, it just runs. It just runs. We don't have to screw with it at all.
Jeff has since left Odyssey in Portland, and now he's in Birmingham, and he's building a new studio for a country music singer who owns a restaurant in Gatlinburg, but it feeds to a station in Knoxville. So he's using the same technology. He's using an Altus console there so they can have a studio at the restaurant in their live performance venue. So here's this morning team, Jeff Kingman and Jeremy West.
But what happened is Jeremy's wife got an awesome job offer in an area with a significantly lower cost of living that Jeremy just happens to like to live in. And we're going to either end the show or continue on. And that's where your guys' technologies fit in.
Yeah. So I talked to one of your engineers and I told him what we wanted to do. And he said, well, I'm actually working on a project because of COVID where we could actually, you know, control the studio from your house. It'll be a monitor, touch screen. And I said, well, that's exactly what we're looking for, because over the course of the 20 years Jeff and I have been working together, I run the board. And I wanted to make it as easy as possible to transition. So I was thinking, if I could control the studio just like I normally do, and Jeff could just show up and talk into a mic like he normally does, that would be the easiest. So now we're...
Of course.
Jeff's still in the studio, so they're getting ready to do a contest. But so that's kind of what happened. So when Milos came up with this design and this product, I was like, yeah, we'll put your test dummies on this. And it's worked better than the console that we had in the studio, which I have to say is an antique and a relic from 2000-ish. So this thing does a lot more. It's easy to use. I bought a simple touchscreen monitor. I control the studio from my house in Washington State.
All right. So I'm actually going to skip this slide because I see that we're going to run out of time here. So let me skip on. When Jeremy says, hey, I run the station, the board from my kitchen table, this is what he's looking at. He bought a Dell touchscreen, runs it on a little computer, and of course, across the bottom there is the Axia Altus that he can literally use his finger to move things up and down, turn things on and off. And then across the top are two open browser windows that are sized smaller, and those are the WebRTC connections. So that's just like your, you know, your Google Meet, your clean feed type of connection. It's just a browser that opens up and opens an audio channel two ways or one way with the audio console. So his contribution is the left-hand meters, which are not showing anything right now, and his monitoring back is the green meters. And then that just comes out his headphone jack or USB connection on his computer. So that's what he's looking at. So this is Thane Conrocht in Oklahoma. Thane and his partner are IT guys, but they had a crazy wild-haired idea to buy a radio station.
We do all of the studio work virtually as well through the use of newer products in the containerized world, where our mixer, our console is virtualized, as well as our phone system is virtualized, and we have nothing but microphones and touchscreens in the studio. It's pretty slick.
So this is his main studio. All that's in there, three mics. There's a little analog mixer somewhere in there. There's two computers, and they're both just running. Well, the left one for the automation is running a remote access program. The right one is literally just running a browser. But we're going to look in more detail what has to be considered to make that work with several mics.
Fantastic product. It's something we had wished when we had previous station used the IQ product in a physical form. This gives you the same functionality, but it's literally a virtual touchscreen, and just that easy. It can be pulled up anywhere. So we have a touchscreen in the studio that has nothing but that on it, and the other touchscreen has our playout system also virtualized. We just basically have essentially a VNC or a remote terminal into that playout system. So everything, if the studio were to crash and burn, lose power, we'd lose the mics, of course, but the station would still be fully on the air because all the guts, the software to produce the content and the software to mix the content is all virtualized in containers. It's really a wonderful system. The VXS, which is our phone system, is also a product that has transformed the way we take calls. We have a voice over IP system that has a PBX and a SIP trunk coming in from a provider that ingests that natively. So our call quality is incredible.
Cool. And I'm going to skip this next slide, too, here. All right. And I'm going
to
skip this.
I have to be up.
Yeah. He was talking about how he was worried about boomers and touchscreens. And because if you ask disc jockeys, would you rather have an audio console with faders or a touchscreen? You give them a choice, and they'll say, well, duh, faders. I don't know how to use a touchscreen. Or that's for, I don't know, surfing the web. And he said, you know, all my older jocks, they just took right to it. In one shift, it was fine. No problems. So that's what he says. All right, let's look at here's the scenario I was faced with. Larry Fuss, my business partner in the radio stations, comes to me and he says, hey, we're going to build a new radio station in Oxford, Mississippi. FM, HD1, HD2, HD3, mostly automated, local live morning show, no line of sight to the transmitter. In fact, we can't even put a stub antenna on the roof of where we're going. It's an office park. They don't allow that, but we do have excellent fiber internet. So I came up with a couple scenarios. I said, well, you know, the standard thing to do would be to put automations and everything at the studio and then use the internet to send audio to the transmitter site. Okay, that'd be a pretty standard setup. Unfortunately, we can't get the same ISP at both sites. They're 2.5 miles apart, and we can't get the same ISP because the office park is pre-wired for AT&T, and they don't want anybody else to come in there. So, and at the transmitter site, there's a company around Mississippi called CSpire, and they're a big backbone company in Mississippi, but they also own they do cell phones. They're a cell phone carrier as well. But they're at the transmitter site because the transmitter site is a cell site as well. Okay, another scenario would be to put a few things at the transmitter site, like the Nautel multicast and some backup for that, and use a multi-channel codec to carry audio back and forth in between. That was another possible scenario. But again, totally dependent on the internet, 24/7, 365, and we have had outages. So I said, well, Larry, why don't we just put everything at the transmitter site? Automations, processing, HD, EAS, everything at the transmitter site, and remote connect to it. And Larry was a little okay with that because we do have one station in Greenwood, Mississippi, where we kind of lost our studio and our morning guy. We had to let him go, and we had no need for a studio anymore. And we do so much. Larry just programs everything to run beautifully. We play an FTP morning show with just-in-time voice tracking, and it sounds great. And everything's at the transmitter site. And the transmitter site's got good power, good internet. So we were familiar with the concept. So we thought, well, let's try doing that. There's a picture of Thane Conrock's control room. We use that as inspiration to build our control room. All right, so again, everything at the transmitter site, including the on-air phone system, of course, the mixing console, stream encoding, and of course, the HD exciter and the HD importer-exporter. So this is what I built. On the right is the transmitter site, and there, the silver face computers are automations. There's an automation server at the bottom, EAS gear that's there at the top, and then on the left-hand side, there's an Omni 11 for FM and HD1. There are, you can't see them very well, but there are four little Dell servers there. I think there are 630s, maybe. They were cheap. They were refurbs. They were $900 a piece and powerful enough to do everything we need. We run the audio console on one plus the phone system. One of them's just kind of, one of them's doing stream processing and the HD 2 and 3 processing. We're using the Omnia 9 option for the stream encoding. And then we have one computer that's kind of a utility computer I use for remote access and doing what I need to do. And then a fourth computer is running Mr. Master for ingest of spots and shows. And then we have the multicast from Nautel is in there as well. And the so there's two networks here. There's the business network, and then there's the Axia audio over IP network. A couple of X nodes as needed. Like we have to get AES EBU digital audio into the multicast HD, so we use an X node to do that. On the left-hand side is the studio, and as you can see, it's computers. There's four screens, there's three computers, and we'll look a bit more at how those work in a minute. So now, if you have individuals out in the world, contributing either simultaneously or just alone, easy peasy. Laptop, mic, headphones, internet. It doesn't matter if there's 200 milliseconds of delay between Joe and Mary as long as they're not in the same room. It's okay. But if they're in the same room, it's a little more problematic. So here's a diagram of kind of what we're doing. On the right, all the stuff at the transmitter site, automations, and the Altus, the VXS with WebRTC, that's built in there as well. Your WebRTC is a separate service. That can actually be handled by a third party. There's third parties that do that as well, or you can install the stack of software on your own computer. Then on the right-hand side, processing, multicast, exciter, and amp. Oh, and everything, the programs all loop through a multi-relay box on the EAS. So that's the one time it does drop. We could do this a different way, but it was easiest just to do it analog, so it drops to analog and goes through there. And at the studio site, that's where you see the different computers. We have a local IQS mixer at the studio to mix the headphones, and they got to hear a mix in their headphones of a couple things. Let's see if I have a slide about that. Several mics, same room, zero delay is needed. So here we use an IQS console from Telos to mix the mics. And then we send one mix of the mics to the transmitter site. Okay. Then for hearing, they need to hear a mix of their live mics and the mix minus from the transmitter site. So everything but what they're sending to the transmitter site is coming back from the transmitter site. And that those two things need to get mixed together for their headphones. All right. So in the studio, the two main computers that they use, the left-hand one is running a browser, and that browses into the computer, the transmitter, that shows them the console. It's a touch. It's a Dell touchscreen. Works real well. There's another tab that's open in that computer, in that browser, and that's a WebRTC connection for their contribution audio going to the transmitter and audio coming back. I just take that tab and tell it, hey, for your audio I/O device, use my LiveWire driver. So in that same computer is running the standard LiveWire Windows driver, and it provides audio out that then gets picked up by the other local console for their headphone mix, and it provides audio coming in from that local console mic mix, and then WebRTC to the transmitter site. On their other computer, they access the automation system. By the way, usually they have these in full screen mode, so they look just absolutely full screen. But on the right-hand computer, on a second tab, we run another WebRTC, and we run that one because there's a couple more things we figured out we need to bring back from the transmitter site, like if you want to talk to a phone caller not on the air, how do you hear that phone caller? Because the phone caller's audio is at the transmitter site, not at the studio. So I take the phone caller hybrid. Also, the automation system has hot buttons, or you may want to listen to some media that's on the automation without it going on the air. And so I need to bring that back. There's a couple of complications why it's harder to do that remotely than in the studio. But anyway, we bring that back. We mix that audio into their headphones or a speaker feed so they can hear the caller and not be on the air with the caller. It's kind of like bringing the Q-bus back to the studio. And then on that other computer, the third computer, we run a little local mixing console, the IQS, and you can see in the setup there on the left-hand side, I'm mixing the Altus Left PC, its audio coming from the transmitter side, with the production program one, which is the mics. So that's where I'm mixing those together using a vMixer, and then it shows up on the external one button on the console. So they can listen to external one, they hear what they need to, just like you would in a studio, mics and program together. If they need to listen to what's on the air, it's 8 seconds delayed because it's HD, but they can punch external two and hear whatever's actually on the air. Not that they just do that to check. Okay, so there's the layout in the control room. Altus console, playout one remote access, and the IQS local mixer, mics and headphone mix. And then that other screen they use for their multi-track. All right. How are we doing? Oh, real close here. This is Chris Green, and let's let him chat for a second.
Yeah, this is way too cool. This audio console is probably the greatest one I've ever used because it's here. Yes, I know it looks like it's here, but it's not. It's at the transmitter site, quite literally. I don't even have to think about what's going on. A lot of moving bells and whistles behind the scenes, but I can touch it. I can literally move levels with ease. It's so seamless for me, and it's helped us at 94.7 The Buzz in a big way because it's one of those situations where I don't know how they do it, okay? I don't care how they do it, but everything I need to do, they're able to provide it in a seamless, great kind of way that works for us.
In our remaining few seconds, let me see if I can make this function. Hey, Chris, are you there?
You've got Oxford, Mississippi.
Hey, man, you're on a $250 Chromebook with a touchscreen, and while you weren't looking, or maybe you were looking, while the audience wasn't looking, I went ahead and turned on my channel on your console and faded it up, and that, I know you guys can barely see this, and I'm sorry I didn't get to arrange to put it on the big screen, but this is not on the air. He's got the automation routed directly on the air right now. Chris, you sound great here. I got you. I do have you on the microphone, so the audience can hear you.
Hey, yeah. Well, you sound great too.
I just showed your video of you describing the room, and you are very disc jockey like.
That's all I know.
So, and let me show people the tab here. This is the tab that I used to remote in to fader number two on the console. At the moment, I got fader number two loaded up with WebRTC, one of the several connections I have available on the console. Hey, Chris, talk to me for a second. I'll show them the meters coming back.
Well, it's pretty cool to see you move meters on your end. It's like magic. But as you mentioned, it's not here, though. It's magically at some remote site, right?
Yeah, it's at the secret transmitter site that we've all been to. Now, Chris, I want to show them that how the faders work. If you don't mind, take your Buzz hot button fader and move it up and down a lot, and we'll watch that remotely.
Yep.
Here. There, so he's moving the fader. So yep. Anybody, so I'm not connected to his computer. I'm connected directly to the console at the transmitter site. I could have remoted into his computer, but I'm browsed at the transmitter site. He's at the studio, browsed at the transmitter site. We're looking at the same thing. I think up to 10 people can be browsed in to the console at the same time. Chris, I appreciate you very much. Chris, pop up the dialing on the phone if you don't mind. So the VXS, yeah. We got three listener lines and one VIP line. He just popped up the dialer right there. So he's remote controlling the VXS as if he had one of our V-sets there, but he can dial out. Hey, Chris, do you know my phone number?
Everybody knows that. Yeah, let me...
Call me.
Let me look that up real quick.
Well, I'll tell you.
Here we go.
615.
I got it.
Okay, call me.
Yeah. All right, here we go.
615-423-0053, and
boom.
Let's see what happens.
Let me call you?
Yeah, call.
Here you go.
Please check the number and dial again.
Oh, that number's bad, Kirk.
615-423-0053. I've got...
To pay that bill.
They're going to pull me off stage in 4 seconds here.
Okay, let me try one more time. 1-615.
No, don't dial the 1.
423.
Yeah, don't dial the 1.
Okay. All right. 615-423-0053.
You got it.
Boom.
There it is. Hey, tell me what I want.
You got a lifetime supply of turtle wax.
All right. Thanks a lot, dude. I got to go. My time's up. Appreciate your help.
All right.
Bye.
Thanks a lot. Bye-bye. You bet.
All right. Well, that is just cool. And the disconnect. And since I'm just going to hit the end call right there. Now, I was a codec on that console. Let's see. There's the control room. Just wanted you to see it live or recorded live. And you can see there I've got the browser's full screen, so you don't see the tabs. The automation system, and then the local mixer. Now, if one of these computers dies, of course he can bring it up on a different computer. He can bring a laptop in to replace some of the functionality he's got. The computer running each of those computers is literally a $200 computer. And there you go. Let's see. I'll leave you with a couple of tips that I've run across in the last couple of years. For remote access, everybody uses what? TeamViewer, SplashTop, all different solutions. I found this thing called dwservice.net. I really like it. It's free, although you're welcome to donate to them, and I do, because I really like it. As an engineer, I got 75 computers that I need to remote access, and I can have them all show up in a browser wherever I am, easy remote access to them. For SIP telephony, we just moved to a SIP telephony provider called clearlyip.com. The guy who owns clearlyip.com also was the force behind Free PBX. So they took Asterisk and they put a beautiful wrapper on it so it's easy to use. So they know what they're doing with SIP telephony, and they even have a page for radio stations because they kind of get what we do. And then look for... I know we talked about VPNs for secure remote access, but there's a lot of difficulty in setup in VPNs, mostly in keeping people from accessing what they shouldn't over a VPN. And if you know what you're doing, you can do that. If you don't, you can actually create a very insecure situation. Watch for things called secure tunnels. Different companies call them different things. There's some free ones out there, and then you can pay for, if you use very much, you can pay more. Cloudflare is offering one of them. And there's some videos on YouTube how to set up secure tunnels with Cloudflare. And I think that is, I'll skip by that. Oh, if anybody takes, my mom appreciates pictures, you know. So, son, what are you doing this week? So if you got a picture, please don't hesitate to send it to me. Thanks a lot. I'm over. Thanks. Yes, time.